Presentation materials and turn it over to Sonia to get started.
Okay, thank you, Jean. This will be a very quick introduction. I just wanted to welcome everyone to the webinar for CERCLA 108B Financial Responsibility Rulemaking for Facilities in the Chemical Manufacturing Industry. Again, as Jean said, thank you for bearing with us in this unusual situation. Hopefully we won't have any technical glitches. I also wanted to mention, just FYI, we have also done webinars on the utilities industry and the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industries, CERCLA 108B Financial Responsibility Rulemakings. You can find links to those webinars and other information on the EPA Superfund Financial Responsibility webpage. If you just Google something along those lines, that webpage will pop up. So with that, I will turn it over to Peggy.
Hi, everyone. Let me advance the slide. There we go. Okay, today's webinar, I'm going to go over, firstly, the purpose of the webinar, then give a brief history of CERCLA 108B, a brief history of the litigation leading us up to this proposal, the rulemaking schedule, the rulemaking history. I'll go over the current proposal that we're discussing today, then touch upon the decision that we came to not propose any requirements, and then discuss potential tribal interest, and then at the end we're going to have a demonstration as to how you can provide comments. Okay, the purpose of today's webinar is to provide an overview of Section 108B of the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, also known as CERCLA and also known as Superfund. We'll be going over the history of our actions under 108B to date, and then we're going to introduce the proposed rulemaking for the chemical manufacturing industry. So briefly, background on CERCLA or Superfund. Generally speaking, CERCLA authorizes EPA to undertake removal or remedial actions in response to any release or threatened release into the environment of a hazardous substance or substances, or in some circumstances, any other pollutant or containment. These are, of course, known as Superfund sites. It also imposes liability for response costs on a variety of parties, including past and current owners, operators, generators, arrangers, and transporters of hazardous substances. CERCLA 108B directs the Environmental Protection Agency to develop regulations that require classes of facilities to establish evidence of financial responsibility that is consistent with the degree and duration of risk associated with the production, transportation, treatment, storage, or disposal of hazardous substances. It also directs us to establish the level of financial responsibility and, where necessary, to adjust it in order to protect against the level of risk that EPA, in its discretion, believes is appropriate based on the payment experience of the fund. The statutory language on determining the degree and duration of risk and on setting the level of financial responsibility confers a significant amount of discretion to the EPA. CERCLA 108B also instructs EPA to publish within 3 years from the date of the enactment of the statute, which was in 1980, a priority notice, which would identify classes of facilities for which EPA would first develop financial responsibility requirements. Priority for developing the requirements was to be accorded to those classes of facilities that presented the highest level of risk or injury. In March of 2008, the Sierra Club, Great Basin Water Research Watch, and various other environmental groups had sued the EPA for not complying with CERCLA 108B. In February of 2009, the U.S. District Court ordered EPA to identify classes and publish that priority notice. EPA did so in July of 2009, And that priority notice identified the hard rock mining industry as the first industry to evaluate for financial responsibility regulations under 108B. That notice also indicated that we were evaluating data to consider other industries for possible regulation. Then in January of 2010, we published an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, which identified three additional industries. Firstly, the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry, then the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry, and finally, the chemical manufacturing industry. In August of 2014, the litigants filed a new suit seeking a writ of mandamus requiring issuance of CERCLA 108B financial responsibility rules for the hard rock mining industry and the three additional classes. In 2016, the court granted a joint motion from the parties and issued an order establishing a publication schedule. In January of 2017, we published a notice of intent to proceed with rulemakings that stated EPA had not identified sufficient evidence to determine that initial rulemaking was not warranted, nor that EPA had identified sufficient evidence to establish 108B requirements. In other words, we didn't have enough information to either impose or not impose 108B requirements on the so-called additional classes industries. In that notice, we stated that we would decide whether proposal requirements was necessary, and if so, we would propose the appropriate requirements. But if EPA was to determine that requirements under 108B were not necessary, we said that we would propose to not impose requirements. This is the schedule that was in the court order. The first industry, the electric utilities industry, there was a signature on the proposal in July, and it was published that same month. The second industry, we met that deadline of December 4th. That was published again later on in December. And then the chemical manufacturing industry, we had until December of 2022. However, that was published in January, so it was signed ahead of schedule. Similarly, the final actions for all three of these industries, we're anticipating we're going to be doing that ahead of schedule for all three. Right now, the thinking is to have them signed in October of this year and to be published shortly thereafter. So for the rulemakings themselves, in December 2016, we signed a proposed rule on financial responsibility for certain classes of facilities in the hard rock mining industry. Then in 2017, a year later, we signed the final action to not issue those same regulations for the same industry. This decision to not issue regulations under 108B was based on our interpretation of the statute and our analysis of the record that was developed for the rulemaking addressing the risk of taxpayer-funded cleanups at hard rock mining facilities operating under a modern management practices and modern environmental regulation framework. After the agency issued the final action for hard rock mining, the litigants involved in the initial lawsuit challenged that final action in court. In July of 2019, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld our interpretation of the statute and our decision to not impose financial responsibility requirements for the hard rock mining industry. That same month, we had signed the notice for the first of the additional classes, the electric power generation, transmission, and distribution industry. And that proposal was based on our interpretation of the statute, which was upheld by the court. It was consistent with the analytical principles that we had used in the hard rock mining final action. And we also solicited public comment on the proposal that financial responsibility requirements for the electric power industry were not necessary. Then in December of last year, we signed the notice to not impose 108B regulations on the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. Again, it was based on our interpretation of the statute, it was consistent with the same analytical principles, and we again solicited public comments on the proposal to not impose 108B on the petroleum and coal products manufacturing industry. So that brings us to today's proposal. In January, we propose to not impose financial responsibility requirements under 108B for the chemical manufacturing industry. We base this on the conclusion that the degree and duration of risk posed by this industry does not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. We presented supporting information and analysis that we used to reach this proposed conclusion, which again is consistent with what we had used in the hard rock mining final action and in the two proposals for the other two additional classes. And we once again are soliciting public comment on this proposal. Okay, so going over the analytical approach that I've been mentioning, we evaluated the risks by examining records of releases of hazardous substances from facilities in this industry in combination with the payment history of the fund, and also looked at enforcement settlements and judgments. We considered the historical cleanup cases to identify potential risk at currently operating facilities and where taxpayer funds were also expended for those response actions. We assessed the risk posed by facilities operating under modern conditions. In other words, the types of facilities to which financial responsibility requirements would apply. We identified and considered relevant current federal and state regulatory requirements, specifically financial responsibility requirements, and we even looked into voluntary protective practices within the industry. The areas which we analyzed were industry characterization, including current industry practices and operations, as well as the industry's economic profile. We also looked at cleanup sites and then considered the role of federal and state regulatory programs as well as voluntary protective practices for this industry. We specifically looked at existing state and federal financial responsibility programs that exist. And again, we considered compliance and enforcement history. This current industry that we're discussing today, the chemical manufacturing industry, is classified as NAICS code 325. 325 is defined as facilities involved in the transformation of raw materials, in other words, oil, natural gas, water, minerals, and metals, into tens of thousands of different products, including bulk chemicals, plastics, pharmaceuticals, consumer goods, and agricultural inputs. The most recent available census data identifies the size of this industry as being about 13,480 establishments nationwide. This sector is relatively stable financially, and financial ratios indicate that it's got a healthy performance. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mike Pease to go over more specifically the analysis that we did for this proposal.
Thanks, Peggy. I'll just spend a few minutes providing an overview of the purpose, the methodology, and the results of what we call the cleanup sites analysis. Basically, to evaluate the need for financial responsibility regulations for the chemical manufacturing industry, EPA looked for examples of pollution occurring under a modern regulatory framework that also required a taxpayer-funded Superfund cleanup. And we called that work the cleanup sites analysis. So first, EPA gathered and collected the different Superfund cleanups in the industry and information related to those cleanups. And we focused on assessing and evaluating the response actions at Superfund national priority list sites and sites using the Superfund alternative approach. Those Superfund alternative approach sites, or SAA sites, they're considered NPL caliber, and thus we kind of consider them at the same time we reviewed the NPL sites. Additionally, EPA also assessed the Superfund removals at non-NPL sites. So in doing the review of each cleanup site or cleanup case, EPA collected information on the timing and nature of releases or threatened releases at the sites. So specifically, EPA sought to identify as applicable, facility operation end dates, release dates, sources of contamination at the sites, NPL proposal dates, the contaminated media at the sites, the types of contaminant, who the cleanup lead was, and also information on Superfund expenditures associated with the site. All right, so continuing, in order to identify cases where releases had occurred under a modern regulatory structure and the releases that resulted in fund finance response actions, first, the sites where the pollution occurred before 1980 were screened out of the analysis. 1980 was chosen as a conservative first screen because 1980 was the year that CERCLA was enacted, and also that the initial regulations under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, Subtitle C of that act, governing the generation, treatment, storage, and disposal of hazardous waste were promulgated. Additionally, EPA removed sites where significant fund expenditures had not occurred by screening out sites where the potential responsible party was identified as the lead for the cleanup at the site. After those screens, EPA reviewed the remaining sites, considering the site history and pollution sources at the site in the context of the regulations that would be applicable today. So, getting into the results now, for the NPL and Superfund alternative approach sites, in the chemical manufacturing industry, EPA had identified a total of 207 of those sites to evaluate, of which 127 of them were screened out based on the pollution occurring either before 1980 or the potentially responsible party was the lead at the site. Additionally, there were 46 sites that were removed from the analysis because on further investigation, it was determined that the industrial activities at the site weren't actually chemical manufacturing. That left a total of 34 sites left in the analysis, of which an additional 30 could be removed as not problematic on account of a detailed further review determining that while the pollution may have occurred after 1980, it still occurred before the relevant regulations that were in place today. And that left a total of 4 sites that represented cases where releases occurred under a modern regulatory framework and that required a taxpayer-funded response. So there's 4 NPL sites that met that criteria. For removals, the agency identified 290 chemical manufacturing sites where removals occurred, of which 148 were screened out based on either having a pre-1980 pollution date or the PRP was the lead for the removal. Additionally, of those 290 removals identified, 108 of them were removed because the industrial activities were determined to not actually include chemical manufacturing. So again, for the removals, there happened to be 34 sites as well that we reviewed in considerably greater detail. Of those 34, upon detailed review, including more information on the actual expenditures at the site, the agency determined that while there was a possible release under modern regulations, significant taxpayer expenditures hadn't occurred at the site. But that did leave 30 sites where releases occurred under a modern regulation and taxpayer-funded responses were required. So it was 4 NPL sites and 30 removal sites. So the primary conclusion from the analysis was that, and I guess this is the first bullet, that EPA identified only a limited number of cases in the industry where contamination arose under a modern regulatory framework and resulted in significant fund expenditures. The analysis also provided an opportunity for EPA to note and document the sources of contamination at the cleanup sites. And so in the chemical manufacturing industry, the primary sources and prevalent sources of contamination at the NPL, Superfund Alternative Approach, and removal sites included inappropriate waste and material handling, various leaks and spills, fires and explosions, poor stormwater management, and just generally poor housekeeping practices.
Okay, thanks, Mike. So considering those prevalent sources of releases, we next looked at the role of federal and state regulatory programs and voluntary protective practices in this industry. We identified a range of existing federal and state financial responsibility programs that may be applicable to these facilities. We are basing this regulatory decision on risk posed by facilities operating under modern conditions, i.e. the types of facilities to which these requirements would apply. We gathered information about federal and state environmental programs and voluntary programs that apply to currently operating facilities within the chemical manufacturing industry. We evaluated the extent to which activities that contributed to the risk associated with the production, transportation, treatment, storage, or disposal of hazardous substances are now regulated, with a focus on these prevalent sources of contamination, which were identified in the cleanup site analysis. We found that a comprehensive regulatory framework has developed since the enactment of CERCLA, including regulations under other federal statutes such as the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, TSCA, and RCRA. In particular, the comprehensive regulations for the management and disposal of hazardous waste, which were promulgated under the authority of RCRA, were designed to prevent these types of releases and assure that past spills are cleaned up by facility owners and operators. The amendments to RCRA, which were established by the Hazardous and Solid Waste Amendments, substantially expanded the corrective action authorities under RCRA and created the Land Disposal Restrictions Program, thus ensuring a cradle-to-grave regulatory framework to manage hazardous waste. In addition, Section 112R of the Clean Air Act amendments requires certain facilities to generate a risk management plan in order to mitigate the effects of a chemical accident and to coordinate with local response personnel. Significant chemical accidents have declined by more than 50% since the original RMP requirements became effective back in 1999. Specific federal and state regulations address issues related to air and water pollution, emergency planning and response, hazardous substance management, and hazardous as well as non-hazardous waste disposal and management. EPA found that the network of federal and state regulations applicable to this industry creates a comprehensive framework that applies to prevent releases that could result in a need for a future cleanup. To locate voluntary programs, we reviewed a variety of industry materials, government literature, as well as academic literature. We found that this industry's voluntary programs can be effective at reducing both the pollution and the frequency of government enforcement actions. Next, we reviewed existing programs that cover a wide range of liabilities, including closure, post-closure care, corrective action, third-party personal injury and property damage, as well as natural resource damages. These categories of damages, actions, and costs are like those that would be covered under a CERCLA 108B rulemaking. Thus, they help to inform the need of a rulemaking. In addition, existing financial responsibility programs help create incentives for sound practices, thereby reducing the risk of releases that would require CERCLA response actions. Compliance monitoring can identify noncompliance at regulated facilities. Enforcement provides legal instruments to ensure correction of deficiencies and cleanup. Enforcement activities reviewed utilizing EPA's Enforcement and Compliance History Online or ECHO data system include major CERCLA as well as RCRA enforcement cases. Where noncompliance is identified, many industry responsible parties are conducting or paying for cleanups, returning to compliance, and improving public health and the environment. Active enforcement serves as an important component of the regulatory framework. The decision to not propose requirements was based on all these analyses that we just went over, and therefore we concluded that the degree and duration of risk posed by this industry do not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B, and thus we are proposing to not issue such requirements. EPA identified a limited number of cases in the chemical manufacturing industry where contamination arose under the modern regulatory framework and resulted in significant fund expenditures. Note that the analyses and proposed findings are not applicable and do not affect, limit, or restrict EPA's authority to take a response action or an enforcement action under CERCLA at any particular facility. The rulemaking record supports the agency's proposal for this class, but a different set of facts could demonstrate a need for a CERCLA response action at any individual site. This proposed rulemaking also does not affect the agency's authority under other authorities that may apply to individual facilities, such as the authorities under the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, RCRA, or TSCA. Potential tribal interest. CERCLA authorities apply in Indian Country. A final decision to regulate or even to not regulate facilities under CERCLA 108B would apply to such facilities that were in or near Indian Country. EPA encourages tribes to submit their comments to the docket to identify information on existing tribal financial responsibility requirements and any other information that they may believe would be relevant to the development of a rule. If a tribe believes they could be affected by this proposed action, EPA invites the tribe to consult with us prior to us issuing the final rule. The deadline to contact EPA for such consultation is at the end of this month. In addition, potential Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act corporations. We encourage anyone under ANSCA to submit comments to the docket to identify any information that ANSCA Corporation believes may be relevant to the development of a rule. If an ANSCA Corporation could be affected by the proposed action, EPA invites them to meet with us by phone prior to the issuance of a final rule. And again, the deadline to contact us for such is the end of this month. In order to provide comments to this proposed rule, there's a docket link which is provided there under the first bullet. The proposed rule was published on January 21st. The comment period ends on April 21st. Instructions on how to submit public comments are provided in the text of the proposal. We solicit comments on all aspects of our proposal, including the completeness of our data. Comments should be submitted to regs.gov and should reference the docket ID number. And now we're going to have a live demo.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike again.
Mike, real quickly, as you turn on your screen, I just wanted to remind the audience in the upper right corner of where the live presentation is now appearing, you'll have additional buttons. Remember the four-arrowed button in the upper right corner of the screen share will make that window larger. If that's still not large enough for you to view it, just to the right of that button, you'll see some additional boxes. They look like boxes with lines around them. You can click either one of those to expand or zoom in even further or pull out and try to fit the content to the size of the window. So I encourage you to adjust your settings locally for optimal viewing during the live demonstration. Mike, your screen is up and you can begin whenever you're ready.
Thanks, Jean. Yeah, so this is, I just wanted to kind of give you a brief orientation of the regulations.gov main docket page for this proposed rulemaking. If you get these slides after and click on the link in the last slide, it'll take you to the docket page for this proposed rulemaking. And here you can find a summary of the action. Also, under the section called Primary Documents, that's the actual proposal itself. So if you click on that, you can see the full text of the proposal. And perhaps most importantly, you can see the comment now button just to the right of the actual proposed rule link. And the comment now button is what you should follow if you want to make a comment. You can see to the right there's an agency contact. And it's fine to reach out to Peggy with any questions, but please don't submit comments directly to Peggy for your comments to actually be part of the formal record for the rule. They need to be submitted into the docket by following this comment now button. Finally, going down, you can also see the supporting documents for this proposal. And while there's a lot of them, if you click on the view all, it'll bring you to this page. And if you sort the supporting documents by ID number, Z to A, over in this toggle, you will be able to see the 7 primary background documents. So if you're reading the preamble of the proposal and have additional questions, your best bet is to check the relevant background document. And I'll just spend a quick minute or two just giving you an overview of the 7 background documents that are available. As you can see, the first one here is the Chemical Manufacturing, the State and Voluntary Program Summary, and that, notwithstanding the name, is actually includes the federal and state environmental regulations and voluntary programs. So that background document identifies existing federal and state environmental regulations relevant to facilities within the chemical manufacturing industry, and it also describes industry voluntary programs with which chemical manufacturing facilities may participate in and which complement the regulatory regime. Next is the Chemical Manufacturing NPL and Superfund Alternative Approach Site Evaluation, and that is basically the cleanup site analysis for the chemicals industry for the NPL and Superfund Alternative Approach sites. So there you can, that document will describe the processes used to identify the cleanups and the damage cases reviewed. It'll describe the various screens employed and the information considered as part of the review of each site. And it will include the results of the analysis, and for each site, the reader will be able to understand EPA's determination as to whether the site had an example of pollution that occurred under the modern regulatory framework and that required taxpayer-funded cleanups. Next is the chemicals manufacturing background document for the non-NPL site evaluation, which would be the removal sites, and that is very similar to the NPL background document I just described, but just specific to the removal sites that were evaluated. Moving down, you'll also be able to find the background document that describes the industry practices and environmental characterization for the chemical industry. And that document will provide a high-level review of industry practices and the environmental profile of the chemical manufacturing industry. It'll include a summary of relevant operational practices and materials and waste involved in typical chemical manufacturing operations. Next, you'll be able to find the background document for the chemical manufacturing industry regarding existing financial responsibility requirements. And that document identifies the applicable state and federal financial responsibility regulations and laws identified by EPA as part of a broad review of the financial responsibility laws applicable to facilities in the chemical manufacturing industry. Only 2 more of these. The second to last document you can find is the background document regarding enforcement, settlements, and judgments in the chemicals manufacturing industry. That document provides information on the compliance assistance, monitoring, and enforcement activities at chemical manufacturing facilities. Specifically, it'll include findings based on EPA's analysis of the enforcement and compliance data from the Environment and Compliance History Online, or ECHO system. For example, it would include the number of cases, the value of penalties, and recoveries associated with these enforcement actions. And the last background document is the Chemical Manufacturing Economic Sector Profile. And that economic profile summarizes public data collection, research, and analysis conducted by EPA with respect to the economics of the chemicals manufacturing industry. It offers a high-level summary of the financial metrics, market consolidation and diversification trends, industry default risk, and accounting standards for environmental liabilities in the industry. It also reviews individual subsectors of the industries, focusing on subsector trends. So those are the available background documents that can be found on regulations.gov. And with that, I will turn it back and turn it over to see if perhaps we want to go over some of the frequently asked questions that we've received.
Okay, I think now would be a great time. Charlotte Mooney, if you're on the telephone lines, feel free to come off of mute, and let's walk through some common questions with the time that we have remaining.
Okay, great. Can you hear me?
We can.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Thanks, Peggy, Mike, Sonia, Jean. This has gone really well. Hey, we're going to do these FAQs because these are sort of the most common questions we've been getting about these CERCLA 108B rulemakings that we're currently working on. This is the fourth of the CERCLA 108B rulemakings that the agency is planning to do. Just reminder, the hard rock mining was the first rule, which was proposed and finalized over the last several years. And now we're working on the three so-called additional classes industries, electric utilities, petroleum and coal products, manufacturing, and then this final chemicals manufacturing proposal. So for this chemical manufacturing proposal, the administrator signed the rule on February 10th of this year, and it was published in the Federal Register on February 21st. Of this year. We just wanted to be sure because we think we had a typo in one of the slides. I think it says January 21st, but it was actually published on February 21st. The comment period then ends after a 60-day comment period, which will be April 21st. And we are now working to complete the final rules for all three of these additional classes industries, the utilities, the petroleum, and the chemicals manual. Well, as soon as the comment period closes for the chemicals manufacturing industry, we'll start work on that one as well. And the estimated time of arrival for the three final rules was, our last projection was December of this year, which was in the fall 2019 reg agenda. So that's the current estimate at the moment. Okay, so that should give you exactly the right information about the dates and what's coming up next. So I'm going to jump to one more FAQ because we don't have a lot of time here. But I guess just sort of a really basic question we keep getting is, why isn't EPA proposing financial responsibility requirements for the chemical manufacturing industry? And I know the preamble is probably sort of long and detailed to read, but basically we lay out in the proposal there the analysis that we did. We gathered a bunch of data. We did some analyses. And based on that record, EPA concluded that the degree and duration of risk posed by the industry does not warrant financial responsibility requirements under CERCLA 108B. And based on that conclusion, is proposing to not promulgate federal financial responsibility regs for this industry.
So it's really just based on the data and the analysis that the agency conducted, which is described in great detail in the preamble, and there's lots of, as Mike showed you, references to the background documents where all of the details are available. So the record looks at things like the history of cleanups under Superfund for this industry, what modern industrial practices are, applicable federal and state regulations, et cetera. So that's all laid out for you in the preamble, which should explain, if you read the whole thing, how the agency came to its conclusion. Another question that we get a lot is, well, if you're not proposing financial responsibility requirements for this industry, does that mean that the Superfund statute and all of its cleanup provisions can't be used for any issues that arise in the future for this industry? And the answer is a definitive no, that this proposal is only addressing the very limited CERCLA 108B provisions for looking at requirements, regulatory requirements for financial responsibility, but it does not impact at all any of the other authorities and conditions that apply under all the rest of the Superfund statute that allow Superfund cleanups to happen and then enforcement actions to require Superfund cleanups to happen and enforcement actions to recover costs from responsible parties for any cleanup that is required. So it clearly is very narrowly just focused on the requirements specifically described in Section 108B of CERCLA. Doesn't apply to any other requirements under Superfund or any other laws for that matter. All existing cleanup requirements and requirements to prevent contamination under the myriad of environmental programs that exist remain in place and are not impacted by this rule at all. Jean, I think we're about out of time.
That's correct. So I think just in the interest of everyone's schedules for today, we'll go ahead and wrap things up. But I wanted to thank you, Charlotte, for covering those quick updates and common questions. So I'll walk the audience through just a few quick final reminders. I want to thank our organizers and presenters for taking time to put on today's session and sharing their information with everyone. And I want to thank the audience who joined us from all over the U.S. for today's live broadcast. Some of you have asked for copies of the presentation content, and I'll remind everybody, for those of you who needed them, if you were unable to participate in Adobe, we do have PDF copies of the slide materials available to download as part of the seminar links or resources page. So if you follow the link that we emailed you to join today's webinar, you'll see those tabs on the seminar homepage where you can access the slides and related resources. You'll also find it inside the webinar right now on the middle right under related URLs. You can actually click on those links, so you look at the seminar resources one and then press the browse to button to actually open it up on your own computer. I would ask you to also fill out a brief online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's delivery, including this new remote model. We do appreciate everybody's patience. We did have to shift things up today, but it looks like we were able to host this thing online successfully, and we welcome your input on using this more distributed model. If you're looking for a certificate for joining us in today's live broadcast, please know you can print out one of those after you submit the feedback form. So again, follow the link to the online feedback form. Fill in your information, making sure your email address is entered correctly, and that you check the box at the bottom of the form certifying you were here for the whole session. Upon completing that form and submitting it on in, you'll then have access to one of these certificates that you can download or print out for your own record. If you happen to participate as a group from a conference room under someone's registration, each person in that room can fill out the feedback form even if they didn't register individually. I just ask the individual who set up or registered for the event to copy that feedback form URL and share it with others who joined you so they can share their own feedback to get their own certificate. Today's session was automatically recorded, and you'll receive an email as soon as the archive is available for on-demand playback. So with that, I'll go ahead and thank